a green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant and a fake plastic earth. That she bought from a rubber man in a town full of rubber plants to get rid of herself.
It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. He's the editor and the publisher of The Timberjates, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Another award-winning year from the Minnesota Newspaper Association. Congratulations, Marshall.
Oh, thanks, Heidi.
Well, let's start off with a big story for the Iron Range having to do with some DFL leadership changes and Senator Tom Bach. The session begins next Tuesday. What has happened?
Well, Senator Tom Bach has been ousted from his perch as the leader of the DFL caucus. And that's a position that he's held for a number of years. In fact, I think it was in 2011 when he was named to the head of that caucus. And over that time, he served, you know, variously as either minority leader or majority leader. Most recently, he's been minority leader. But in either case, you know, having that position does give, or certainly did give, Senator Bach a lot of clout in St. Paul. Legislative session obviously can go on for months. You know, a lot of legislation gets pushed through there. In the end, the final decisions and the final agreements that get reached often happen, you know, behind closed doors, and it's usually the majority and minority leaders and representatives of the governor's office who are sitting in that room when all the final deals are worked out. So not being in that room, obviously, is going to have an impact for Senator Bach, but also I think for, you know, this part of the state, which certainly tends to benefit when area legislators are in positions of power like that.
So why do you think it happened? What's changed?
Well, you know, a few things have changed. I mean, obviously, one of the things that happened in 2018 was there was a switch over, especially in the suburban parts of the metro region, where you had a significant number of seats flipped from the Republicans to Democrats, and that meant that the balance of power essentially within the DFL caucus is increasingly in the metro region. The other thing that's happened, I think, and I had mentioned this in an editorial, I think it must have been a year or so ago, that one of the ramifications of, say, the Iron Range becoming more of a swing district rather, or a swing area in terms of, you know, voting, as opposed to being a DFL stronghold, is that it was going to decrease the clout of the Iron Range within the DFL caucus. I think this is, you know, a manifestation of that exact thing. I think it's going to be much tougher in the future, barring change in what we're seeing in terms of, you know, the locations of these various senators and how they fit within the caucus. I would imagine we're probably going to the Iron Range perhaps losing some influence on a long-term basis as a result of this. So the Iron Range did always benefit from being such a pivotal part of the DFL electorate and the DFL caucus down in the legislature. So certainly what we've seen in the last couple of years and how that's going to play out in ways like this, like we've just seen with Senator Bach.
And who is the new Senate Minority Leader then?
It's Susan Kent, and she is a state senator from suburban Twin Cities.
That will be a big change. Let's move on to another story that we talked about last fall, but there's more to it now, about a merger of the Northeastern Minnesota community colleges and the six campuses. What more have you found out?
Yes. The plan that we had talked about, which was a merger of the five colleges that make up the Northeast Higher Ed District, and they actually have six campuses, that the plans to merge that have been given, preliminary approval now. At the time we had talked last fall, it was moving towards that, but they hadn't made a final decision yet. Now, I should say that even this decision is not necessarily final. This kicks off, a planning period, about a two-year planning period, as they go through the process of merging these institutions, and they have to, merge their accreditation and all that. So there's a lot of work involved. And at the end of that period, then, assuming that everything looks good and, the plan seemed to make sense, then they would have a final decision on whether to then go ahead. And, then it would be, a couple, 2-3 years potentially before, after that, before everything then is fully implemented. So this is still going to take a few years for these changes to take effect, assuming they do take effect. But, it will certainly have an impact. The Northeast Higher Ed District officials, particularly interim president Michael Raich, they're indicating that this is going to have benefits for students, which will make it easier for them to, they won't have to, enroll in two different colleges. They could be taking classes maybe in at Hibbing one day, and then maybe they could be taking classes at Itasca and some other field, because most of these community colleges kind of specialize in certain areas. So this would give students some more flexibility. But it also is an effort to respond to the declining enrollment that they've been seeing. They've seen about a third of their tuition-paying enrollment disappear in the last 8 years. So that certainly had an impact, and so this is in part an effort to try to respond to that as well. So I guess we'll see how this moves forward, and we'll be continuing to watch this because obviously it has a big impact on a lot of the communities up here. I mean, these community colleges are significant drivers of the local economy, and certainly they play a big role in workforce development. So, we'll definitely be paying attention as this moves ahead.
All right. It is a big time in Ely right now. It's the Winter Festival. Tell us what's going on.
Well, there's all kinds of things going on. I mean, the list of activities up in Ely is long. I couldn't possibly go through them all. But the Winter Festival does run February 6th through the 16th. So obviously, there's we're just getting into the heart of it. And, of course, the highlight is always the snow sculptures, which are, on display at Whiteside Park in Ely. And one of the things this year that's different is some of the local educators decided this was a good opportunity for some art education for students. And so they're using the snow sculpting as an opportunity for to teach students in the area about sculpting snow. And so they've been out doing that, and you'll be able to stop by and see some of the work of the students in the area. And so it's a good opportunity for them to learn about sculpting in general and then how to work snow, and they're hoping that maybe they'll create a few new snow artists for future festivals.
And it's a great year for it. Lots of snow.
Sure is. And the temperatures are continuing mild. So, it's hard to complain. I mean, I remember last year when the sculptors were out working on their snow sculptures in Ely, and the temperatures, were 20 below, 30 below, and windy. I mean, it was brutal. And now they're just basking in very mild conditions. So it's a great time to come up and check out the festival.
So is it just packed full of people during this time?
I'm sure it will be. This will be a big weekend in Ely, no question.
Yeah. That's Marshall Helmberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. We'll talk to you next week, Marshall. Thanks.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks.
If I just turn and run, and it wears me out.